With me this week for another in our year-long look at the history of the nation's major civic holidays is Matthew Dettis, professor of history at the University of Oregon and the author of Red, White, and Blue Letter Days, An American Calendar. This week, we celebrate the oldest and perhaps the most venerable of American civic celebrations, Independence Day. Welcome back, Matthew.
Good to be with you.
It may seem like a silly question, but let's take a moment and just ask, what are we celebrating on Independence Day on July 4th?
Is this a trick question, like who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Well, it's only a trick because I know the answer, but go ahead.
Right. Well, you know, to state maybe the obvious, Independence Day or the 4th of July is, by definition, America's oldest public holiday. It marks the day on July 4th, 1776, when the Congress declared the independence of the new United States from Great Britain during the American Revolution. And so it's that day on which that grand separation was proclaimed.
Now, John Adams made the case, though, it should have been July 2nd, and that's why I asked the question.
Right. Well, Congress did resolve to declare, but they actually made that declaration on July 4th. And what's really important about this, in a way, is not what Congress did, but what the people did, because the declaration actually wouldn't mean very much if, in fact, the rest of the revolution hadn't occurred and if the people hadn't then properly proclaimed it. So in a way, then, what makes the declaration what it is and what makes this holiday what it is that popular acclamation of the publication of the Declaration. By publication, we mean not just putting it in print, but actually making it public, in a sense, sending it up the flagpole and see if anyone salutes.
Well, let me pursue that just a step further, because you may or may not agree with those historians that have tried to suggest that it was really July 2nd that mattered. And I should bracket this by saying they're looking at in the context of the time. Someone like Pauline Muir, for example, says that the actual declaration was on the 2nd and the document later was intended to explain it, but it wasn't terribly important, although she would agree with your statement about it was really the war that mattered, but that later on it was the declaration that became more important, meaning the written document. How would you respond to that?
It's certainly true that Congress officially resolved to declare independence on July 2nd. And if we think about that act as a separation from Great Britain, and we think about the Declaration of Independence that was ultimately disseminated as having one chief function, and that was to sever that relationship, then certainly July the 2nd becomes very important. To my way of thinking, though, July the 4th is the most important date because it's the date on which Congress officially resolved to declare independence and began the process of publication. And by publication, we mean not just putting it in print, but actually making it public so it would be proclaimed far and wide, read to troops, read to throngs of citizens. And it was their act of accepting it, of proclaiming it, that actually made it important. Because if it wasn't the people of the country itself who resolved to actually follow through and make good on the declaration, then it wouldn't have gone anywhere. So in that case, the declaration becomes an important, not just a text, but an actual action. And it's transformative, and it's transformative through people's action in the same way that words uttered by an umpire at a baseball game, you're out. That changes things. That has effects. And that's what the population at large was doing when they helped to proclaim the document. So that's why I see July 4th as more important.
And I think most would agree with you, and that's certainly the good transition to your research. So let's look at the holiday itself. And in your introduction, you write, Independence Days have their standard formulas, but the festival is as essentially local as it is national. Now, that comes as a bit of a surprise because most of us consider Independence Day a national holiday, and here you're suggesting there's a large element of locality involved.
Yeah, well, as the famous House of Representatives figure in the late 20th century, Tip O'Neill, said, all politics is local. And what we see in Independence Day, as in so many other things, people act locally even when they imagine what they're doing, and what they are doing has a national impact or implications. So in places all across the country, we see these small Independence Day festivals, parades, picnics, orations, and so forth. And it's people acting locally in their capacity as citizens of the nation. And so what we see then is a kind of projection of their particular way of being America on the rest of the country, so that even something like sectionalism or sectional identity becomes a way of saying, look, the way I am living, say, in the South or in the East is the way to be an American. And if others don't agree or if others express different interests, they're being, in a way, less authentically American than I am. So it's a kind of looking out from individual and community and regional perspective sometimes towards the nation and understanding it in really local, immediate terms.
Okay, good point. Let me take you back to the first Independence Day celebrations. You write, when Americans declared their independence in 1776, they committed a revolutionary act. And throughout the war for independence, their commemoration of that event served the partisan goals of their revolutionary party. What does that mean?
Well, you know, in a way, what Americans were doing was indulging in some wishful thinking. The Declaration said that the ties with Great Britain were severed. But that wouldn't really mean anything unless the Revolution was actually fought and won. The Treaty of Paris ultimately was signed and so forth. And so, in a way, then, the celebration of Independence Day was a way of really cultivating a certain political program. That is, the program of the Patriots or the Rebels. Once the war was won and the new governments were established, then Independence Day continued to reflect a particular political position, especially of the Federalists. And so even during the time of the debates over the Constitution, the 4th of July, Independence Day celebrations were actually used as lobbying events for ratification of the Constitution itself. So it had this kind of effect of celebrating America into existence.
And did that change after, let's say, take it from the period when the Constitution was ratified up to the Civil War?
Well, yeah, it did. We see by the time of the Constitution, it was a Federalist holiday. We see the emergence of a two-party system pretty early in the nation's history, where we see the Federalist on the one hand and Democratic Republicans on the other, the party of Jefferson. Especially by the 1790s and after the election of 1800, when Jefferson was elected, then the 4th of July became a Democratic-Republican holiday, celebrating the nation, of course, but also the document, the Declaration of Independence, one of the most sacred texts in American history, and its principal author, Thomas Jefferson. So the day becomes a Democratic-Republican holiday and filled with all sorts of implications, based especially on the early parts of the document, which has these really radical words that all men are created equal. So it becomes a kind of an invitation and provocation for Americans to claim a full measure of equality within the United States. And so in a way, then, the Declaration of Independence, its meaning changes, the holiday changes, and makes that sacred date, July 4th, available for all sorts of political agitation.
I want to come back to talk about two particular groups that seized on those revolutionary words or radical words. But before I get there, the Civil War poses a particular challenge to the celebration of American independence. Tell us about that.
Well, of course, if I can go back to those words in the Declaration that all men are created equal, then the potential to see the Declaration of Independence as an anti-slavery document were huge. And that's, in fact, what happened. And so in many ways, then, the South would have a very different interpretation of the day and of the document that stood behind it. If the Civil War was about slavery, of course, it was also, as the most devastating event in American history, a time when the Union itself was torn apart. And the 4th of July is about the Union. It's about nationalism. It's about the construction of a nation and a people. And so with the Civil War, when that was ripped asunder, what would be the meaning of Independence Day thereafter? In the immediate aftermath, what we see in many ways is a kind of rejection, at least by many white Southerners, of the day as a significant day worth celebrating. Of course, they wouldn't necessarily take responsibility for causing the war, and they wouldn't want to celebrate it in the same way that Unionists would in the North. So in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, in many ways, it became a black celebration, an African-American holiday of liberation in the South, while many whites stayed more or less in a kind of somber mode.
You made reference to the anti-slavery movement using the 4th of July or Independence Day to their purposes. Did they actually use the document itself to their ends?
Absolutely. For one thing, they would stage their events often on the 4th of July. And they would use the Declaration of Independence as their sacred text, in some cases going so far, especially among radical abolitionists, going so far as to reject the Constitution. They called it a covenant with the devil or a corrupt document because it accepted slavery within the structure of the government. So they would use it and proclaim the passages that talked about equality.
Now, the most direct reference that I recall in my limited knowledge of the subject, of course, is the use at Seneca Falls of the Declaration of Independence by a woman suffrage movement.
Yeah, and as I said, it was a provocation and an invitation for various Americans to claim the rights promised, or they would argue were promised to them in the Declaration. And so what we see at Seneca Falls in 1848, for example, is a paraphrasing or rephrasing of the Declaration so that it's not just all men are created equal, but all men and women are created equal. And so it's a call of conscience and an effort to broaden the dimensions of liberty and equality as guaranteed, they would argue, in the Declaration of Independence. And then it would be continued to use that way throughout the 19th century. By 1876, for example, the National Woman Suffrage Association would issue a new Declaration of Independence. And we see throughout the history of the United States, redeclarations, using the words, sometimes paraphrasing them, shifting them a little to expand the realm of liberty and equality.
Right. And I think this is a good example of what I was referring to earlier, where other historians have really come down on the side of this document was probably more important than the actual vote for independence, in that it's a document that will be continually reused by every cause that wishes to seek independence or equality in America.
Absolutely. And it's an irony that it has no legal standing. It's did its job in 1776, but it has this ongoing sacred quality in articulating American values and principles.
Okay. We only have a couple minutes left, but let's take it up to the present, and maybe you can deal with the history from essentially the Vietnam War, which is another challenge, up to the present. What's happened to American Independence Day in contemporary America?
Well, we know that there's always a potential for it to be used to criticize or to measure the United States against its ideals, especially those articulated in the Declaration. It's also just a holiday. It's the nation's birthday, a time for celebration. And often, at a birthday, we don't necessarily critique the birthday boy, the birthday girl. You know, we just celebrate. And a lot of that happened, especially as Americans achieve greater prosperity and security. But it always had and continues to have this potential for criticism. In 1976, Ron Kovic published a book called Born on the 4th of July. And in that book, he offers a searing indictment of America's involvement in Vietnam. And he brings up the fact that he was born on the 4th of July itself and really embraced all the values of America and then saw them shattered in his own Vietnam experience, metaphorically, but also literally, as he became disabled during his service. And so it was a time when he, like so many other Americans, questioned the course of American foreign policy, but also society more generally. Since that time, I haven't noticed the holiday used in quite that way. We've seen a series, I think, over the last 30 years or so, of generic celebrations that seem to be merely celebratory, mindless in some ways, frivolous. And, you know, that's okay. That's what birthdays can be about. But as I said, only time will tell whether a new sorts of crises will emerge that will invite Americans to use the day as a time to really question the direction of the United States and the realization of its values and principles.
Well, your work and certainly the history that I've read suggest that that in fact will happen, but you're right. We'll have to see. So thank you, Matt, for joining us.
It's good to be with you.
Okay. Looking forward to getting you back to talk about Labor Day, the next American holiday in our series. I've been speaking with Matthew Dennis, professor of history at the University of Oregon and the author of Red, White, and Blue Letter Days, An American Calendar. This is Talking History.